This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, big weekend coming up. Rockets get going 8:30 Sunday night against the Golden State Warriors. We'll talk plenty about that throughout the rest of the day. We'll do a 5 Reasons I Hate You at 8:25 today for the Warriors. That'll be fun. Not hard to find 5 reasons there. So circle that. Be ready for that. The NFL draft is 6 days away. Day 2 is a week away from today. And day 2 is kind of fun. Well, will be kind of fun for a couple of reasons. The first is that the Texans, as of right now at least, have 3 picks on that day. They've got a second-round pick at 58th overall, and then thanks to the Laremy Tunsil trade, they've got 2 third-round picks, their own and the one that they got in that trade, 79th and 89th overall. So as of right now, that stands to be a fun day. And you're going to be, Seth, on the air on Texans Radio on day 2, right? On Friday?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's an added bonus. You get Seth C. Payne with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer breaking it all down right
and
here.
At some point, we're also going to get to hear from a former teammate of mine who's going to announce the picks.
Yes.
Or at least announce one of the picks if the Texans do indeed have a second and third round pick. If they don't trade everything to move up in the first round,
yep.
We're going to have a former player announce one of the picks.
That's right. And that former player, they sent out the list yesterday of all the former players. Every team has at least one former player that's going to announce a pick. Some have 2 for whatever reason. Maybe it's a plethora. Maybe they've got extra draft capital. The Green Bay Packers have 7 different guys announcing picks, but the draft is in Green Bay.
Yeah.
So that's
I don't know
why.
If they have 7 second and third round picks. I'm guessing a couple of those are going to be a duo or something.
Or maybe they even get some that on day 3 are announcing picks. Some are current. They're all former players to varying degrees of stardom. So without further ado, because I know a lot of people probably haven't seen this list. It got put out on social media. The person announcing one of the day 2 picks for the Texans, either the second round pick or one of their third round picks, will be tight end Owen Daniels.
Ah, good choice.
Good choice. Yeah,
man who represents one of the better eras of Houston Texans football, and a guy that was a second day pick, who the Texans got the absolute most out of.
They did.
They
did. He was a 4th round pick back when the 4th round was on day 2. He was a Pro Bowl level player. He still lives in Houston.
Yeah.
Like, that's my checklist. This is a very important thing. If someone's going to go up and spend 8 seconds announcing a pick on behalf of my team, I don't want the only reason they're up there is because they were on my team. I need them to embody some of the other things that I want, like good player, good dude, still lives here, all of those things.
Yeah. The other thing about Owen Daniels is Owen's one of those guys that I think probably has more recognition outside of Houston and Denver than he otherwise would because of fantasy football.
Mm-hmm.
I think Owen Daniels was one of those guys that, it's kind of like with Arian Foster back then. The Texans weren't a team that had any kind of national notoriety, but people know these guys.
A lot of people had OD putting up some solid numbers for them in fantasy.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
I like that when I find people that get They get nostalgic for guys that were good to them in fantasy or good to them on Madden.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of the nice little things when somebody's like, oh, I used to play you on Madden all the time. You were awesome, blah, blah, blah.
Most guys are cool with that. There are a few guys out there that when you bring up, I think mostly it's when you bring up fantasy football with guys who are in the league still, like during the season when you
see because they hear all the negatives of it too.
Yeah, or they're like, hey man, I'm not focused on my stats. Stop getting in my ear about this fantasy stuff, all right?
Madden's always good because the only time you hear anybody say anything on Madden is either they liked you and used you or you crushed them in some game.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Madden is almost universally positive stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I don't think Owen has done this before, gone and announced a pick. So I don't know if there's advice to give. It's a pretty simple thing to do. Now what I would recommend, and this is not, you know, we're not trying to pick on Chester Pitts here. I love Chester Pitts, but when the draft, I forget where, it was in Cleveland. It was in Cleveland back in 2021.
Yeah.
This is the first ever pick of the Nick Caserio era back in 2021. Here was Chester Pitts announcing the pick of Davis Mills.
Let's go. First of all, I hope y'all having some fun because this is crazy out here. This draft is awesome. Much love to the traveling Texans. My guy right here, 24 years of marriage. Happy anniversary to his wife. I just found out I walked across stage.
Okay, pause. That right there is when he should have gone into the pick.
Yeah,
right? I've no problem acknowledging the traveling Texans who were there.
You get a cheer. You get a cheer for 24 years of marriage from everybody. The loudest was probably obviously with the traveling Texans, but a lot of people can hear, 24 years of marriage.
I mean, even the 24 years of marriage thing, I'd have been like, all right, let's keep it moving here. Let's keep it moving. But Chester kept going.
Show his wife some love. Show his wife some love. Cleveland, what's happening? I'm going to take 10 seconds and tell y'all a quick story. My dad is from New York, but he loves the Cleveland Browns. When I was a kid growing up, the Brownies this, the Brownies that, them Brownies gonna be all right this year. When I got drafted, he wanted the Browns to draft me. I didn't get that lucky. I got drafted by the Texans, so it's all good.
Okay, pause right there. There's a point where I get what he's doing. He's playing to the crowd in front of him, but he got out over his skis there. He's like, I didn't get that lucky. I got trapped by the Texans, who you are representing on the stage right there, Chester.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
He went well over the 10 seconds.
He did. He did.
Just keep going?
He had to announce the pick, so let's relive the magic. Yeah.
With the 67th pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, my Houston Texans select Davis Mills, QB from Stanford. Go Texans, baby.
Go Texans. My Houston Texans, who I just said I'd rather be drafted by the Browns over.
I'll tell you what, I'm glad there's no video of this because I can empathize with Chester 100%. When you're in front of a hostile crowd, you can either go all in and just lambaste them, or you can try to win them over a little bit.
Yeah.
And before the Falcons played the Patriots in the Super Bowl here in Houston, I weirdly got hired to be the MC at a Patriots pep rally.
Oh, jeez. So tell me this story.
I can't remember. It was like I got up and everybody's looking at me like, who the hell is this Jamoke? And I said who I was. And I think my strategy was I was going to point out the various Patriots people that we had on the team or in the organization. And at that point, Wes Welker was the receivers or assistant receivers coach, whatever he was.
Yep.
And there were quite a few names and I got no pop from Wes Welker and I abandoned it immediately. But I can understand the strategy, I guess.
Yeah.
I think if you do that, if you go in, you either got to go straight down the middle, you know, have some love for your own team.
Yeah.
And then if you want to go one direction or the other at the draft, you got to just tear into the hosting city.
Right.
You got to just play full heel.
Go
like
heel.
Pat McAfee did the 1 year.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, because McAfee did it, I think, when it was in Tennessee, didn't he?
I think
McAfee got up and basically just started talking smack. I don't fault Chester for trying the strategy out at all. Yeah, he should have pulled up short of saying he wasn't that lucky to get drafted to the Browns.
Yeah, that's the 2019 draft was the one in Nashville, and you know why I remember that? That was the year, I think it was 2019, because that was the year the Texans drafted two tight ends. They drafted Kahale Waring and I think Jordan Thomas that year, and Ryan Griffin was at the draft, at the time, a current Texans tight end, and he like punched a window because they drafted two tight ends.
Punched a plate glass window.
Yeah.
if I recall, and
got hurt. And we would not have known about it except he suffered some damage from punching that window.
It's not clear that that was related. I don't think the story is that he heard about it and then punched a plate glass
window. It is now, Seth.
But the optics of it were very much, they weren't great optics at all. Yeah. Sean. I was at when I was with the Jaguars, we were doing some kind of autograph signing during the draft, and somewhere along the way, I was sitting next to a young defensive tackle out of, I think he was from Georgia, Amarlos Leroy, awesome dude, and it got announced on the broadcast that there were rumors that they were trying, the Jaguars were trying to trade for some pick that included trading Amarlos Leroy.
Oh, you're sitting with a guy who's part of a trade rumor?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
He might have got up and walked out.
He did?
He was like, what the heck is it? He wouldn't have said hell. He was very religious. But he was like, I mean, he was like a six-round draft pick or still a young player or anything. And the last thing he expected was his name was going to be mentioned at all during the draft broadcast. And in my memory, it went out over the PA. Like, it was up. They had the big screen TV showing and everything. We were outside underneath a tent. And he just got up and walked out. Yeah.
That's interesting. He's like, okay, if you're getting ready to trade me, I am not signing autographs for the man. All right.
And I'm not going to be sitting here when I get traded, you know, and have to. Oh. He probably wanted to call his wife, you know, because she's going to hear about it.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that was in the late 90s, I'm assuming, right? So kind of a simpler time and place without cell phones and everything.
A lot of people were just watching the TV broadcast. She wouldn't have seen it on social media, but she might have been watching the broadcast.
I wonder if players nowadays are almost a little more desensitized to stuff like that, like their name getting thrown around in rumors because there's so much over-communication now about stuff like that.
I don't know, but when you're a guy that's not a starter or anything like that, not expecting it.
That is a random person to have, like a six-round backup defensive back.
Yeah, you're not expecting your name to get thrown around in trade discussions. I tried to tell him. He was sitting right next to me. I was like, hey, man, it's a show of respect. And he was like, no.
Good to be wanted, man.
Somebody wants you, man.
Yeah, it's good to be wanted. All right, so we've got the whole list. We're not going to go through the whole list of guys announcing picks for other teams, but there's some interesting names on the list here. Did any of these names jump out at you, Seth, here?
Dante Hall immediately for the Chiefs.
Our former coworker. Yeah, he's the only one for the Chiefs. He's announcing the Chiefs pick on day two.
John Lopez, I asked him what was the argument. There was an on-air discussion or debate that afterwards Dante Hall was just like, all right, radio's not for me.
Yeah, that was like 8 or 9 years ago. We probably have listeners who are like, what are you guys talking about? Back in 2016. The Brock Osweiler season.
Yeah.
We shuffled the lineup around, and the midday show was John Lopez, Fred Davis, and Dante Hall, and I think Landry was producing. Mm-hmm. And then Fred left, and they put Cody in there.
Yeah.
And then Dante ended up leaving over some argument.
Lopez had criticized Brock Osweiler.
I knew it. Yeah.
And Dante Hall was defending him. And I think it was Dante Hall, to his credit, he realized, man, the negativity that surrounds sports radio and everything, it's just not what he's into.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the life he wanted to be living, and he realized then that, like, all right, I'm not in on this.
The best part about Dante Hall's story of becoming a host here is that he got the job applying through the normal HR portal on the then CBS Radio HR app or the website or what. Like, he applied like someone would apply for any other job with the company.
I think our PD at the time was Ryan McCredden, and Ryan McCredden's looking at this like, wait, is this?
Are there two Dante Halls?
He thought it was somebody named Dante Hall.
Yes.
And what a coincidence. And then like, oh, wait, no, this is the actual Dante Hall.
I love that part of the story.
You'll get an interview at least. Yeah, for sure.
That made me really like Dante Hall, and I still like Dante Hall.
It just wasn't for him.
Yeah.
You know, like the level of just for, especially sports radio used to be more toxic. I credit podcasts for kind of changing people's appetites.
Yeah.
I think the level of political discourse, the heatedness of it, kind of turned sports discussion into a little less hot takey. Mm-hmm. I think now people more go to sports radio for like, oh, just get me away from everything else for a little while. So yeah, maybe Dante should make another run at it.
He
probably has a podcast.
He may. Well, and Dante is one of those guys that you were just talking about, Seth, that people definitely come up to and talk about Madden and stuff like that. Like, Hall was arguably the greatest kick returner in the history of the sport. He had an elite nickname. He was the human joystick.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a great nickname. So, yeah, so Dante will be announcing the Kansas City pick. I'm going to go under on a minute announcement for Dante Hall. I think 10 seconds, he'll be in and out of there, if I had to guess.
Another name that caught my eye was TJ Slaughter, linebacker from the Jaguars. He's going to be announcing for the Jaguars. And it's just the one little tidbit about TJ was he made money in college working as a male stripper. And at one point,
hold up, stop.
Yeah. Somebody had gotten a picture of him from his stripping days and put it out in the locker room at some point.
Okay.
Brandy, if you're listening, that's why my search history right now might look a little different than it typically does. Yeah. I see Seth was searching for male stripper TJ Slaughter for a while this morning.
Yeah.
I couldn't find the image. But I'm not going to give up. But TJ, my dream is that TJ will go out there and do kind of some kind of a stripper move, like announce the pick and then do a split or something.
Oh, my
like
God.
That
would be great. Or just shows up in a Jacksonville colored banana hammock. That's it.
No, a Jaguar print. It's got to be a Jaguar print.
Yeah.
That's the most stripperish thing you can
absolutely
do.
Absolutely. Okay. So if you're an NFL team and you're sitting with TJ Slaughter at the combine and he sits down with you for your 15-minute interview and you know about this side gig that he has.
Yeah.
And by the way, he went to Southern Miss. So my guess is the bags of the illegal NIL money might not have been flowing as freely as places like Alabama or Georgia.
He's just trying to make a buck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So would you have found him to be...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Would you have looked at his stripping job on the side as a positive that he's being enterprising and just trying to make some money, or would you be taken aback by the world that he was finding himself in?
I'd look at it as a positive.
Yeah, I think, me too.
For the most part, especially back then, because the internet everything wasn't online. Everything wasn't going to get it. I don't think there was any danger of embarrassing his team on social media or anything.
No.
You could kind of do something like that and keep it on the and keep it low key. So yeah, I would. He was an awesome dude. I loved TJ.
Oh my god.
He was. Gave me dance tips at times.
Yeah, of course.
Hey TJ, give me something to tell me something I can show the lady. And I'm like, oh yeah, you lost me at your eight pack abs. I don't think I can quite do that, TJ. Yeah.
I respect it, man. A side hustle, and you're up late at night probably too. But he probably got some private gigs now. Southern Miss, I'm guessing that, dude, a male stripper in Southern Mississippi.
Dude, no, listen, man, I'll tell you. No, male stripping, compared to a lot of stuff that guys have gotten paid to do as SEC athletes back in the day, the male stripper is pretty tame.
Yeah.
There's lots of people very excited to see athletes in various circumstances. Yeah. Back before there was NIL money to earn a respectable living.
Jason Sehorn's name is on this list. That jumps out. He was a former great player, I would say, at his peak of his powers. Former spouse of Angie Harmon, the gold standard for white defensive backs back in the day.
Yeah, Jason Sehorn. Of the few this century.
Yeah,
of a starting white corner.
He was
in the
Cooper
NFL.
DeGene before Cooper DeGene was cool. Jason Sehorn.
He was Cooper DeGene with Hollywood appeal.
That's it, man. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, everybody, I know Southern Miss isn't in the SEC, but the SEC is where there's a big example of, man, guys have gotten paid to do some weird stuff.
Yeah, Google, put it in your Google machine. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate to say
this. Oh, no, it won't show up in Google.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, that's a tease.
Guys who might want to enjoy watching their wives in different circumstances and what have you.
I hate to say this, but the worst pick announcer ever was a fellow Cornell grad, Seth, a couple of years ago. Remember?
I know. And I can't. I'm sorry I didn't get this audio beforehand.
Dude, but Ed Marinaro, we don't have enough time to play it. It's only a 4-hour show. It's
Ed Marinaro, runner up for the Heisman back in the day at Cornell University, would go on to great acting success. Got up and didn't realize the format of what he was supposed to do. And he started to basically give out his life story and tell it sounded like it was going to be a 15-minute speech.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to go out and basically give him the hook,
announce the pick,
tell him to move it along.
This isn't why you're here. Yeah, I felt bad for him.
Can I give you a real quick Texans related story?
Yes, of course.
When Kubiak's first year, he brought in Bum Phillips to talk to the team,
mm-hmm.
and it was really, really cool because like this was as Bum wasn't quite as sharp as he used to be, and he got out and. And it was kind of like it was everything he said was great, but it was kind of like listening to your grandfather when he's telling the same story a couple times and everything.
Sure.
And it was really cool because the team was extremely respectful about it. And it got to a point where his daughter kind of came out and coaxed him away from the stage. But like in that he had told a couple of really good stories, but then he's just kind of wandering and everything. And I just liked it because it was a bunch of young guys who were super, super respectful and almost as if they were listening to their own grandfather. And you could see how much respect Kubiak had for Bum Phillips.
Yeah.
Bum was around a while there towards the end of his life.
Oh, yeah.
And, everybody always treated him with the,
he was around the Texans towards
at
the
times,
end?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's really
we'd
cool.
See him, I'd see him on, even after I wasn't with the team, you'd see him in the tunnel on a golf cart and everything.
Yeah.
And just everybody always treated him with the absolute utmost respect.
Oh, that's good to hear, man. Repeating himself aside, was he good?
No, it was kind of, it was the same old Bum Phillips.
I could see that.
No, that's what I mean. It was like, it was really cool stuff. He was talking about, it was after a special teams practice.
Okay.
So he was talking about special teams, and it was everything that Bum Phillips was, which was talking about caring about your teammates and everything and how important special teams really was, because that's the core essence of what makes a really good team is caring about stuff like this.
Yeah.
That part was really, really cool. Yeah.
Okay, Payne and Pendergast with you. So we're going to do a mock draft injection here in about 20 minutes and change. We do it every day at 7:45. We go through a different mock draft. The player, it feels almost like Circle of Life, where we've sort of started out as the Tyler Booker show, the guard from Alabama, when the draft season started, and then he drifted off the radar because he was getting a lot of buzz for a while, then he had a bad combine, so now he's not getting picked by the Texans, he's going in the second round, and we circle all the way back, and if I had to guess, that Tyler Booker is probably right there with any other draft prospect as far as guys getting mocked to the Texans. Brian Baldinger did a breakdown of Tyler Booker. Brian Baldinger, former offensive lineman who does great work for the NFL Network, and he does breakdowns on his Twitter feed where it's as old school gets within the social media realm. It's Baldinger with his phone out filming the screen on his laptop, breaking down all 22 film of different players. And just there's really never a negative one out there. There's not a ton of criticism on these. You can tell the ones he likes and the ones he's over the moon on. So let's take a listen to a little bit of Brian Baldinger gushing over Tyler Booker. Here's cut number one.
Tyler Booker, number 52, left guard, Alabama. This is what violent hands look like. You want to run a stunt, bam, get him over your center, come underneath there with Proctor, and you just keep the pocket flat. All right, you pass that stunt. Violent hands, he's got those. All right, you watch him down the goal line. Like, watch him just take two right into the end zone. Run right behind him. There's your... That's your path right there behind Highway 52. Tyler Booker to find the end zone. Now you get this right here. Like, watch his power step with his right foot. Power step. Now you start bringing it. Now you snap the hips. Snap the hips. Here you go. This is run blocking. 101, inch by inch. You walk him right off the line of scrimmage.
Okay. I mean, I don't even need to see the video. I'm listening to that. I'm like, all right.
Does he sound swarm worthy? Yes.
Sounds swarm worthy.
Of the various people the various reservations people have about Tyler Booker, there's zero concern about whether he's swarm or whether he has an appetite for violence or anything like that.
Yeah.
I do like that there are a lot of instances of him blocking two guys. I don't – pancake blocks don't really impress me all that much. I love it when I see offensive linemen pancake a guy and then work up to a second guy.
Yeah, let's go find another pancake.
Guys that just were like, yeah. Oh, I'm going to land on this guy, yeah. And then I'm going to show everybody what a man I am. Like, no, if you knock the guy down – and the running back's behind you, go up and block two, and he does a lot of that.
He does a ton of that, for sure, Tyler Booker, especially in this 2 minutes of video Baldinger has. By the way, all these highlights that he's breaking down is against Georgia. So, yeah. You know, so we should point that out. This isn't Alabama, you know, against UT Chattanooga in week two.
He ain't doing it against the Sisters of the Poor.
That's right. That's right.
A school that I feel horrible about, but like, because I don't – there's probably some Sisters of the Poor – school out there, and maybe they have a good football team. Maybe. You know, I don't know. But that's what every football coach says. He ain't doing it against the Sisters of the Poor.
We'd have seen the Netflix talk on that by this point. Here's more Brian Baldinger on Tyler Booker.
His stance is a thing of beauty. It's so consistent. Like, I don't care how fast he is. It doesn't matter. Like, you get outside, you get your footwork right, and you pull and you lead, and you find someone in a different color jersey, and you do this to him. You just knock him right on his something, like right on his back. And then you just give him another push just for fun. All right, now you do this. All right, you get Jalen Walker, number 11, one of the elite players in this draft. They're going to run this crossfire stunt inside. And Walker's coming right at Tyler Booker, right? He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know to run through him or go around him. Either way, he ain't winning. Those are 34.5-inch arms, and he's got him locked out. It's over. Like, his feet are in the ground. He's locked out. Take a photo of that. Take a screenshot. Like, Milroe makes a throw. Look where he's at. Look at the knee bend, the leverage. It's beautiful.
The Jaylon Walker thing on the stunt, Seth, is really funny because Walker is a linebacker for Georgia who's probably going to be a first-round pick, high first-round pick, and he comes in on this stunt, and Booker is just standing there waiting for him. And it looked like Jaylon Walker was getting ready to sit down in an obstructed view seat at a baseball stadium.
Yeah.
Like, if you've ever been to Fenway Park or Wrigley or one of those old stadiums, there are seats that get sold very cheaply where you sit down in the chair and you're behind this gigantic column where you can't see anything.
Well, and that's the thing, though. The thing with Booker that I like, because people have reservations about how athletic he is, when he pulls, he's... Like, I would take a guy with a football IQ that understands the angles over a guy who's really athletic but can't seem to hit a guy in open space.
Yeah.
And the offensive tackle version of that is Laremy Tunsil. Laremy Tunsil, as athletic as he is atrocious on screens. And at times, like, he just doesn't look like he knows how to actually get a body on a body in space. For all of his lack of athleticism, supposedly, I think Booker does a great job with that stuff. Yeah. And when he pulls, he's always in the right angle, and he always gets everything down in space, or when he's hitting guys from the side. Like, he's got the right technique and body positioning to overcome some of the negatives that people have.
Yeah,
about
it doesn't
him.
Matter if you're running a 4.8 40, which is excellent for an offensive lineman, if you're running the wrong direction, you know.
Yeah.
All right, one more from Baldinger, gushing over Tyler Booker.
This is what bringing the big wood looks like. Violent hands. Works with Pootie Carson. Same guy that trained Aaron Donald. Works with him on his hands. Watch the violence right here. All right, free to help. I mean, just cracking some ribs right here. Knocking people down. Is there anything more fun for an offensive lineman than to de-cleat somebody? So clean. So yeah. Good. What a future.
Well, what a future. What a future.
Okay. Well, so this is a classic one where he's the guard. There's nobody on him. He goes out to help the tackle. And then he sees, oh, I've got an opportunity for a kill shot. So he goes out and takes the kill shot. Sometimes I think people overrate the blindside kill shot because the defensive tackle is engaged with the center. Because we've seen with the Texans, at times, guys go for a blindside kill shot, and meanwhile, somebody else is looping around on a stunt and hits the quarterback clean.
Yeah.
So there's an intelligence that I think Tyler Booker shows and demonstrates that he knows how to scan and work in like the appropriate time to go for a kill shot. It's the funny thing about Texans fans, it's just cool to see on social media, is how excited they get when they see anybody picking up a game or a stunt.
Yeah, yeah. No,
Texans
I do.
Offensive line,
I do. I'm
was
like,
so bad at it.
Yeah,
last year.
I'm like,
yeah.
Look at Tyler Booker picking up that stunt right there.
Yeah, a lot of the more blue collar stuff or the stuff's on the more mental side, Texans fans have a huge appetite for that right now.
Yeah.
So that's where I do think I think that Booker does enough where you can feel confident that, all right, he might not be the world's best athlete,
mm-hmm.
but what he does the right way. And really, the right footwork and the right angles, that matters a lot. Because there's a lot of guys who are really good athletes, but you take the wrong step and it doesn't matter, because then you got to make up two steps just to get back to where you should have been. And I think he demonstrates a lot of that acumen that some of the other prospects don't.
We will do a Five Reasons I Hate You for the Golden State Warriors in about an hour from now, a little less than an hour from now, to get you ready for that series. And we've got people texting in reasons to hate. I've got five already, but I'm open to more. Here was Brian Windhorst. We were talking earlier as we shift gears over to the Rockets for a few minutes. We'll do a mock draft injection in about 15 minutes. We were talking earlier in the show, and my contention was this is a big opportunity for Jalen Green, this series to... I think it's a big opportunity for the Rockets as a whole. I think for a two seed, there's a lot of the country that has not been watching the Rockets this year, and I think it's a big reason why they're such a big underdog to the Warriors. Amen Thompson may have been getting the most buzz of any individual Rocket over the last few months, and that was a lot of that was fueled late in the season by him being a huge part of shutting down Steph Curry. 3 points for Curry in that game they played a couple of weeks ago. Here's Brian Windhorst on The Nation learning about the name Amen Thompson.
I feel like Amen Thompson is going to become a much bigger, higher known name in the next 2 weeks, because that's the guy who the Rockets are going to put on Steph Curry when it matters.
1-10 shooting.
And this guy is the NBA athletes, the guys who play in the NBA are top 1% athletes. Amen Thompson is the top 1% of the 1%.
There you go.
This guy is an absolute freakazoid athlete, and he is relentless defensively. That is going to be a big part of this series, is the Amen Thompson on Steph Curry matchup.
Okay, so, you know, this current team doesn't have all the old emotional baggage of losing to the Warriors in the playoffs, and that's good. I think us as fans have all the emotional baggage of playing the Warriors, but all of you will remember one of the most frustrating and maddening things about the Rockets losing to the Warriors at times back in the day was that they would just simply lose track of Steph Curry.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the biggest threat on the opposing side? Like, what do we absolutely not want to happen? We don't want Steph Curry roaming free behind multiple moving picks and having open, wide open shots. And yet, for large stretches of times and in games, there's Steph Curry running free. They would just completely lose track of him. I have zero fear of them losing sight or losing track of Stephon Curry in this playoff.
I do too, and I think some of it's Amen Thompson, but you look at the head coach of those Rocket teams, Seth, and we'll talk in Five Reasons I Hate You. We'll go through the four playoff series that just were each a different type. They were each a kick to the junk of Rocket fans, and each for different reasons, but Mike D'Antoni was the head coach of those teams. Mike D'Antoni's like having an offensive guy be your head coach in the NFL. You know, Ime Udoka is a guy who is massive on the attention to detail on the defensive side. You know, I think your point is a really good one, and I think it's not just Amen Thompson, but I think from top down, this team is wired to be they have to be incredibly attentive on the defensive end because they're just not very good on the offensive end.
Right,
you know, if they were inattentive to details on the defensive end, they'd have been playing in one of those Wednesday games this week, the 9-10.
It is really interesting where their offensive rebounding is so good that it almost in a lot of ways becomes that, all right, you're not good in the half court, but because you're so good at offensive rebounding that it's your own way of tipping the scales in terms of number of possessions. And if every time you get an offensive rebound, it's like a new possession and it slows the game down.
Yeah.
And the offensive stuff, it's a combination of, it's not just that it helps out your defense, but it helps do those things that you can't do if you don't have a good half court offense. You slow the game down and you've got a way of competing with a slowed down game. It just doesn't look the way people want it to look.
Yep.
I would love for them to be as good at offensive rebounding, plus also really good at shooting. But that's not that team this year.
Not this year. And maybe they go find a shooter in the offseason. The Knipple kid from Duke announced yesterday he's going to be eligible. He's announcing his eligibility for the draft. I think that'd be, if they're still at 9 and they keep that pick, I think that's a perfect pick at 9 to get a guy who's, that's his, his main skill,
Another guy that will turn down the nickname that we want to give him because Cocaine Curry has, he's not, Cocaine Curry does not want to be called Cocaine Curry, Reed Sheppard.
Right.
Or at least he hasn't embraced it.
No.
I feel like an ice-cold shooter called Cold Knipple is an awesome nickname.
I like that.
And, yeah, probably not the best marketing strategy.
No. No. Cold Knipple. The Knipple.
Ice-cold Knipple. The Knipple. Oh, come ice-cold Knipple.
The Knipple is hard. yeah. Reed Sheppard will always be Cracker McBuckets on this show. Okay, just that's in this world, he is Cracker McBuckets. So Amen Thompson gets to announce his presence with authority to the world. I think Jalen Green, Şengün is probably the best known for guys who don't watch the Rockets on a regular, for people who don't watch the Rockets on a regular basis because he made the All-Star team this year. I think there's going to be an element to watching the Rockets for the average fan that's going to be like, oh yeah, Dylan Brooks is on this team. Now there's a reason to hate the Rockets, you know.
Yeah.
It's a different Dylan Brooks. He's a slightly more rational Dylan Brooks than the one that used to try to poke LeBron back in the day.
Well, I think the Dylan Brooks versus Draymond Green. Could this become the team where if people hate Dylan Brooks and they hate Draymond Green because almost everybody hates Draymond Green?
Yeah.
Does it become one of those, like, I just want to watch this because somebody I hate is.
Yeah, I think they cancel each other out. Like, I don't think they tip the scales one way or the other. I think
Draymond Green is far more hated than Dylan Brooks.
Dylan Brooks
is more of a like, oh, yeah, that guy was, I remember him from when he was a pain in the ass versus this time or that time. Whereas Draymond Green is just crossed over into a different level.
In the spirit of WrestleMania this weekend, Draymond Green is a main event heel. Dylan Brooks is a mid-card heel. You know, he's in like the fourth match on the card. Yeah, he's like, you know, Draymond's the guy you put on the poster for WrestleMania against whoever the good guy is. Like that's he. You're right. He sells tickets. He's that much of a heel.
What's the best thing you can do to become a heel in wrestling?
Stab somebody in the back who was your friend.
Like betray somebody.
You betray somebody.
Come out and just all of a sudden. And literally, right? Like you come up from behind them when they're not expecting it.
And you
hit them in the kidneys.
The best heels are the ones who were good guys who stab a fellow good guy in the back. That's what John Cena, that's why this WrestleMania coming up on Sunday is setting all sorts of gate records because John Cena stabbed Cody Rhodes in the back.
Hold on a second. I'm going to write this note for weekend. Find a way to betray Sean. Okay, got it.
They couldn't hate
take this,
you.
Take this to the next level.
Oh, yeah. Seth just hits me with a chair at the draft party. That would be great. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. Mock draft injection time. Now, this is a seven-round mock. We're not going to go through all seven rounds, but Josh Edwards of CBS Sports has a familiar name at 25. He's actually got two guys in the first three picks that John Harris had yesterday when he did his mock draft with us live here on the air. So we'll do the mock draft injection and a very interesting one, some legal issues, at 89 for the Texans here. Would the Texans draft this guy based on what he's got going on off the field right now? That is coming up next. People are intrigued by the idea of Seth Payne as a heel. I am too.
I like this concept of cheap heat.
Yeah.
Where you said one of our listeners said to introduce me to the concept of cheap heat, where you basically just insult the city that you're in.
Yeah, I think you'd be excellent at that.
That's the old Andy Kaufman thing, right? When he was like, Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's cheap heat, yes.
We're just wrestling women in general. Like, that's a good form of cheap heat, yeah.
Andy Kaufman was walking heat back in the day, yes. All right, mock draft injection time. Let's do this here. This is Josh Edwards, CBS Sports. A seven-round mock draft. We are 6 days away from night one of the draft. We are, we're 6 days away from Thursday night. We're a week away from day two. And he does a seven-rounder here. We'll go through a few of these picks. There is one in particular in the third round. The Texans have two third-round picks. That's very interesting to me. But first, let's start with the first-round pick, 25th overall, with the 25th overall pick in the Josh Edwards CBS Sports seven-round mock draft. The Houston Texans select Gray Zabel, offensive lineman, North Dakota State University. Seth, for the second straight day, we have our mock draft expert. Yesterday was John Harris, live on the air with us, taking Gray Zabel. And now we've got Josh Edwards taking Gray Zabel, when, admittedly, a lot of the big-time offensive linemen have flown off the board already, including the two that Daniel Jeremiah said the Texans for sure want to take, which is Tyler Booker and Kelvin Banks Jr.
Yeah, and I think that some of the – at 25, I know that Caserio swears by gar that we don't draft for need, It sometimes it conveniently works out that a position of need also happens to have one of the best available players at that point. When you look, when you just do the exercise of going through various mock drafts, it's hard. Like, regardless of whether the person's accurate or not, it's rare that you find the Texans sitting at 25 without a notable name at offensive guard or offensive tackle that's right there.
Yeah.
Whether it's Tyler Booker or Gray Zabel or Donovan Jackson, just at the guard position, if you're looking at Donovan Jackson as a guard. And likewise with the tackles, there's usually a pretty appetizing name there. So if what you need is an offensive lineman and you want to take the best player available, I think it just, this is the kind of year where it feels like it's going to work out.
Yeah, I think so too. And interior offensive linemen tend to drift to that back end of the first round as opposed to the upper part anyways, just as a position.
So Gray Zabel, my reservations about him are mostly just the same that I think that Caserio and other GMs do after from small school guys. It's you just haven't seen the body of work of him going versus big stud dudes the way you have when somebody plays at a big school. So he showed a lot of promise at the Senior Bowl, but it's still a really small body of work. That's where I just feel like knowing and seeing the way Nick has operated the last few years, that if it comes down to maybe, let's say it's Tyler Booker or Gray Zabel and they're both available right there, I feel like Nick just feels better about the body of work of Tyler Booker.
Yeah.
He might very much see the upside in Gray Zabel, but he's just more comfortable with Tyler Booker.
Could totally see that. By the way, have you noticed that the one thing that you and I were nervous about a month or so ago as the combine was getting ready to take place, Kenneth Grant testing through the roof and winding up a top 10 or 12 pick, he is sitting there still at 25 in a lot of these mock drafts.
Well, and you know, that was a really interesting thing John said yesterday that we didn't get a chance to circle back to. And I might have to have him on my live stream this week. John just kind of casually said, well, you know, you never know when he might get upset and decide to leave in the middle of practice. And I'm like,
Was. I think he was talking about Walter Nolan.
Oh, did you?
Know,
I thought you said Walter Nolan. Oh, okay. No.
I said
Charles Grant.
No. Hang on. Slow down. I was just talking about Kenneth Grant from Michigan just now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somehow. I heard. I'm sorry. I was thinking defensive tackles, and I heard Walter Nolan.
No. I was talking about Kenneth Grant. You love Kenneth Grant, and remember going into the combine, we were worried that Kenneth Grant was going to go from intriguing prospect to specimen that tested through the roof on the 40 and things like that.
So Walter Nolan, disregard to everybody, I wasn't talking about Kenneth Grant, I was talking about Walter Nolan.
But Kenneth Grant is still sitting there in a lot of these drafts.
That caught my ear. Yeah, the big thing was Kenneth Grant, and this is why, again, I try as much as possible to defer to guys like John Harris. I mean, people that have access to the All-22 and watch the entire season of some of these guys, the question about Kenneth Grant a lot is that he seems to run hot and cold, that it's not as consistent. He got better this last year from the previous year, so it's not, he doesn't have as glistening a resume and a track record. I like the upside of Kenneth Grant. Mm-hmm. I think that he looks more athletic on film than how he tested at the combine. So that's an intriguing one. I feel like he still might be a big wild card, that he might show up in the first round earlier than a lot of people expect right
He's
now.
He's still there in this draft, which is why I brought him up. Would you rather have Gray Zabel or Kenneth Grant if you were the general manager?
I'd rather right now, and I'm a fan who doesn't draft best player available, I want Gray Zabel.
Yeah.
I think all the same upside for Kenneth Grant is there for Gray Zabel. I think by offensive line standards, the stuff at the Senior Bowl especially really showed that, man, he moves his feet really, really well.
Yep.
And has a good feel for body positioning and everything in a way that you can't teach that. If a guy doesn't have good feet, lots of guys are going in the first round where there's kind of questions about just whether they're athletic enough to have the footwork they need. I don't worry about that with Gray Zabel. I think he's just got a special level of fluidity to him.
All right, with the 58th pick, we don't need to – okay, we'll do it. Darius Alexander, defensive tackle, Toledo. 79th overall, Dylan Sampson, running back, Tennessee, who John Harris had the Texans taking yesterday with the 89th overall selection. Now, Ben, give me the sounder here. This is an interesting one. With the 89th overall pick in the Josh Edwards CBS Sports mock draft, the Houston Texans select Isaiah Bond, wide receiver, Texas. And for those who aren't up to speed on the Isaiah Bond story, Isaiah Bond has been accused by a woman in Texas of sexual assault. Now, Isaiah Bond, and this is very recent, he's lawyered up now, and lawyers for Isaiah Bond have filed a lawsuit against this woman who they say made false statements to the Frisco, Texas Police Department. Bond turned himself in last week on an outstanding sexual assault warrant, and he was released after a $25,000 bond. Bond's lawyers say a sexual encounter with the woman, unnamed in the suit, was consensual. The lawsuit asks for economic damages and a civil trial. Bond's agent, Damian Butler, sent an email to all 32 NFL teams with the first page of the lawsuit attached, writing that Bond, quote, is completely innocent of the allegations levied against him and will fight to clear his name, end quote. Bond went on social media and said the accusations were patently false. So he is denying these charges, and to the extent where he's got lawyers and he's countersuing this woman, or he's suing this woman. I don't know if she's filed a lawsuit. He got arrested. So this is a criminal issue that he's turned into a civil issue against her. I guess my overall question here, Seth, is the Texans in this mock draft have not yet taken a wide receiver. Do you think the Texans have the appetite for this off-field, you know, fairly high-profile off-field stuff going on with Isaiah Bond at pick 89?
I think it's one of those things where you got to look into it really aggressively and try to figure out if there's something that's very clear that, okay, this is extortion or something like that. Like, if they can find that, okay, this is almost definitely bogus,
yeah.
Hypothetically, I have zero clue about exactly, you know. Then I think, yeah, it might be an opportunity. It might be. Remember Lyle Collins? When Lyle Collins emerged as a person of interest in a homicide, the offensive tackle, the Cowboys ended up drafting him.
Did they draft him or sign him? I think they got him as an unrestricted. I don't think
they got him.
Know
yeah,
they
gave him the same deal that he would.
I think that's what it was. I think he was. I'll check. But go ahead. Continue with the story.
So that was a weird one because it happened right before the draft. He wasn't even a suspect or anything, but it scared the hell out of a lot of people.
Yeah, he was a good player. He's thought to be like a first-round talent.
Right. My thought at the time was, and I advocated this for the Texans, just because you draft a guy doesn't mean you have to sign him to your team.
Yes.
And I felt like as soon as he dropped below his position, go ahead and draft him. Obviously do your research and everything because you want to find out if, wait a second, is there something to this? It turned out there was nothing to it.
Yeah.
He had nothing to do with it at all. I felt like that was a situation where some teams were more scared off by a potential negative PR hit.
For sure.
Yeah, and
I
felt like, man, you don't have to pay him a cent and figure out what the risk-reward is here and just draft the guy if you feel like there's a good chance that he's not involved in it.
He went undrafted in 2015, so all 32 teams passed on him the whole draft, and he wasn't even accused of anything.
You know what happened after was his agent had told teams, hey, if you draft us past a certain round, we're not signing. So they kind of...
Yeah, they made poison the waters a little bit.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of teams that had the idea I just had.
Yeah.
But that his agent, who I think his agent also later admitted that it was a bluff, but said that we're not going to sign if you draft him.
Yeah, I was doing day three of the draft that week, and I remember saying the Texans should draft him. You know, use one of these six-round picks you have. You can draft a guy you're probably going to cut, or you can draft Lyle Collins, who might not – he may actually be in trouble. Nobody's advocating murder by drafting Lyle Collins in that situation.
No, and he doesn't ever have to be an employee of your team.
That's right.
You know, like, all you've done is drafted the rights to sign him if it doesn't turn out that he's a murderer,
which
he was not.
He ended up not being. Ended up playing in the league for a long, long time. Absolutely. May still
so
be
with so Isaiah Bond, not to make light of the accusations, obviously, he's a guy that – If you can do the research and dig in, and I'm guessing there's a whole bunch of draft day type scenarios with NFL teams right now, like where they're as unrealistic as the scenario in draft day, the movie was where the Browns had the 7th overall pick and they trade for the number one overall pick and then decide to start researching the guy they would draft number one overall. I think this is actually kind of a realistic scenario where teams are saying, all right, we really got to dig in and figure out this situation because there might be an opportunity here if he is completely innocent.
If I had to guess, they're already doing it. You know, they need a wide receiver, and they've got picks in that range. And now he's supposed to go higher than 89, and you're right.
Right,
this might be a chance to get a small win on the margins there. All right, I wound up in a bit of a YouTube wormhole yesterday, and somehow the Will Anderson trade wound up. The YouTube of the sequence of the Will Anderson trade wound up, and I watched it. And I'm like, I think people want to relive this. This might have been the pivotal moment in why the Texans are a relevant, good football team again. And there's so many little morsels in this thing that are great. We're going to do that. We'll do 5 Reasons I Hate You for the Warriors coming up in about 30 minutes. Stay there.